I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome, dear listener, to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, Season 5, Episode 1, the 11th year of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Matt. Hello. Hello, dear listener. Welcome
years.
Back.
11 years. 11 years. I don't think I've done many things for 11 years, Joe.
But you've done me. I mean, the podcast.
I've done you in the podcast.
In the podcast.
11 years. Wow. 20. So the first, that first gear of the year, all the way back then.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if we did one in the first year. Maybe we did, but 2013 was definitely when we started.
Yeah. Eating crisps in the back of a shop and people complaining about us eating food on
Yes, podcast. That's right. We used to get crisps and gins in a tin from a little shop down the road from GAC. Those were the days. Look at us now.
Yep. Just ask long-time listener Mo Gravett because he will tell you what it was all like because he's been here since the beginning. But we're back. Back for 2024. Our strongest year ever.
It's going to be the strongest. It was the strongest gear of the year ever. I really enjoyed Gear of the Year. I thought we had some strong contenders. In fact, dear listener, we're going to be talking a little bit about that on this week's episode. We're going to be taking a look back at Gear of the Year and our Gear of the Year choices that we made alongside Blake Weiland from the Tone Mob and Philip Carter from the 40 Watt Podcast. We're also going to be having a chat about the gear that we've bought. So new gear that we've bought since the end of season 4. Well, mainly me, Matt. You've been living out of boxes as you're moving. Obviously, dear listener, I should also mention that for the first time ever, Guitar Nerds is now available in video format on YouTube. God knows why you would want to watch this. Watch, you know, just me and Matt talking for the next hour, but it's the thing to do, dear listener. All podcasts have to have video now, so Matt and I have I've reluctantly joined that.
I look terrible for the first one. I've sort of got a mixture in my house, listeners who aren't who can't see, but it's freezing in the UK at the moment. I don't know about you, Joe, but it's about -2 where I am. So I've cranked the heating up and now I'm a mixture of both hot and cold. So I'm all flushed. But I am wearing the Guitar Nerds pink in spirit of the first ever episode. So
You are. And you have just moved house, hence the very plain backdrop that you're...
Yes. Well, we'll talk about a bit more in upcoming, I think, Joe, because we're going to talk a bit about 2024 what we're going to buy.
Exactly. Well, let's get into the podcast. This week's podcast, dear listener, is sponsored by Stringjoy Strings and Isotope and Native Instruments. It's also worth always giving a shout out to Lewitt Microphones, who provide the microphones that me and Matt are podcasting with. And if you're watching, also the mug that I'm drinking a nice alcohol-free Erdinger from. It's very good, the Erdinger. Nice. Are you doing a dry January at all, Matt, or are you probably half-cut at the moment?
I don't need to drink as much as you, Joe, so I don't need to take as many as extreme actions. I have got some beers left over from Christmas, though. Me and my brother-in-law did a bit of a beer swap. So I'm a big fan of sour. So he bought me lots of crazy sours. I had toxic waste flavored sour.
That sounds awful.
It was great. Blueberry sour, which was like completely blue. Also very good. But the strangest beer, which I haven't got around to drinking yet, is a Thai green curry IPA.
That sounds absolutely awful. What is wrong with a nice British ale, Matt, or a Belgian beer?
Bit of Timmy T, bit of Landlord. Where's my Boddington's? Boddington's doesn't exist anymore, but yeah.
Doesn't it? Oh, that's
a
shame.
No. All the classics have gone. For your American listeners, you can have a nice Sam Adams. Yeah, no, I'm not doing Dry January, Joe.
Okay.
But I'm not drinking right now, unlike right. you.
Fair enough. It's alcohol-free. It's a booze-free Erdinger. Yeah, so that's fine.
Booze-free.
So, dear listener, we are going to crack into it. We're going to talk about looking back at Gear of the Year. We're going to be talking about the gear that we're going to be buying. This episode, of course, is called Great Gear to Start the Year. So we're going to be talking about that. Our question of the week this week that we'll get to either later on this podcast or maybe on the Patreon episode. You can find that, dear listener, on patreon.com/guitarnerds. The question comes from John By over on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group. He put in a question about gear predictions for 2024, and it's had a bunch of comments. So I kind of wanted to take a look at what you all think is going to be, you know, the gear of 2024. Always difficult for me and Matt to do gear predictions because we can't break any embargoes and we know a lot of the stuff that's coming, but we're going to sort of loosely talk around it.
I tell you what would be interesting. We should have, maybe for next week, Joe, we should have looked back at our 2023 predictions for 2023. Because I think we did a similar thing last year.
I think we do it every year.
I mean, I think we probably do it every year, but it'd be interesting to see how far off the mark. Because we didn't get everything. You know, we don't know everything. I wish I did.
No.
But
we can talk about what last year was. We certainly will get into that. And there's a bunch of news, dear listener. Obviously, there have been loads of stuff. Kemper finally joined the sort of the small profiler thing with their profiler player. There's the new absolutely massive, ridiculously powerful FR speaker from Laney, of all companies. The Gibson Mod Collection. I've bought some stuff. I bought a Thorpe FX Camo Flange, which I love. Want to talk about that. And we'll probably listen to some sound samples from the Ashdown Saint Soap bass, which is a bass I had a lot to do with the production of, which is finally out and about. And just another look at the Boss BP1, because I've been getting really into it. I've been getting really into recording simply, like not using a lot of plugins, because I'm very plugin crazy when I record stuff. I was like, what if I just have great DI sound and then use like a little bit of reverb and things like that? And using the Boss BP1 as kind of an amp sim almost. I just got some great results. But we'll get to all of that stuff later. My cat's just woken up. She's going crazy out here. that'll be a great addition. Ava, come in here. Come and hang in here. It's okay. You can just hang out here. She'll work it out. Let's talk about some guitar stuff. So let's take a look back at Gear of the Year. The winners, Matt, winners of Gear of the Year were, we had the Boss IR2, of course. That was a big one.
A surprising one, considering I think it launched 2 weeks before Gear of the Year
what is the problem,
actually
that?
Started.
It's always a problem because often I find on our Gear of the Year, the things that win are the things we're most excited about at that point in time. So I do wonder how the test of time is going to affect the IR2. But that said, on the Facebook group, we had plenty of people who were commenting saying that they'd picked up IR2s and they were really getting on with them. Yogi, the guitarist, posted a picture of his pedal board, I think, featuring an IR2. It definitely, you've been saying this for a while, and I've sort of been like, no, it's not, you know, amps aren't disappearing quite that much, but it definitely looks like people are, I feel like the IR2 has had a better reaction than the IR200 for Boss, even though the IR200 has more.
I think there's something to be said about the iconic look of a Boss compact pedal. You know, we've had many different shapes and styles over the years, but I think there's something to be said about anything fitting inside of a compact shape. You know, as soon as you put something in there, it's like, oh my god, that's another Boss pedal. Boss, that shape is iconic, that design is iconic.
It's a great shape, isn't it? It's a great looking, super robust pedal.
You know, mine and many other people's opinion, the best there ever was and will ever be. I personally don't think you can beat it. I think it is the best design ever,
right?
But I think IR2 was great, but I think with a lot of things that we've done similar, this does a lot. And actually, I think products that, you know, have always done really well for us are like really simple, really easy to use. So IR200 is great if you want all of that stuff. But actually, IR2 packs all of that into a compact. And then you're just like, well, so you can use it as an interface. You can use it on your pedal board. You can use it to practice. Yeah. And it's really cheap. You know, and it's not as cheap as like some of the crazy cheap OEM stuff you can buy from Amazon, but it's cheaper than a Strymon Iridium or similar. But I do think that Boss iconic shape has a lot to do with it.
I think not having a digital display is kind of actually an advantage, I think. And they're certainly, you're certainly not the only brand to do that. You know, there's plenty of the Walrus stuff doesn't have digital displays. Mm. No, you know, there's loads of companies offering analog, you know, not analog, rotary controlled things, but I kind of think that's what bridges the gap between someone who's happy to use something like a Quad Cortex and someone who just wants some more original stuff, trustworthy stuff. The IR2 is in a pedal that's... How many times is the foot switch tested on a Boss pedal?
It's like 100,000. I think I've got the book, so it's 100,000. You know, they're like you say, you know it's going to last. But perhaps you're right. I think there's a tactile thing to a compact pedal or something that's hands-on. You know, when DM101 came out, there was lots of discussions about, you know, should it have a screen or should it have, you know, X, Y, or, you know, Z? And I was like, well, actually, you know, if you think back to something like the DL4, it was so good because it was so hands-on.
Yeah.
And we were like, that's what we want. And I think you're right. I think a screen can put people off. A screen puts it in a box, in a space with modelers and people who are comfortable with using that. And actually, a lot of guitar players want something more simple, more tactile, more hands-on. So again, I think it's putting all of that in a compact. Suddenly it's like, this is a cool product that I can buy. That's not a lot of money. And it's made by Boss, and I know Boss, and I trust them. So yeah, it's been great. And actually, I think it's one of the best products we make today, I think.
Right. That's good. That's good. Because on Gear of the Year, we can get swept up in the moment a little bit. So I'm pretty happy with this. I feel like we've awarded a great product that, you know, that it's genuinely a product that probably will stand the test of time.
I think it will be a good, consistent seller for Boss. I think it will solve a lot of, you know, I was walking around town on Saturday and there was a band busking and the whole band were plugged into like one of those multi-input PA speakers. Right. So it's got the power amp in it. It's got like four inputs on the back and it sounded pretty weak. And I'm like, it's because the guitar player was just going guitar into his pedals into this.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, if you just had something to like shape it and give it some character, you know, it would sound a million times better. And I was like, for 180 quid, you can do that. So I think that's the thing, because, you know, Strymon's great, but again, they start to feel premium. They start to feel expensive. It starts to feel like a commitment to that option. Whereas I think the IR2 feels like I could have that and it's a great thing for the toolkit, but I don't necessarily need to have it all the time. Like, you could have it on your pedal board and not necessarily ever really turn it on unless you needed to.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's going to be one of our consistent, you know, good sellers. It's a great pedal. It sounds really good, and it's got a lot of options as well. You know, even for you, if you wanted to load it and just use it as a cab sim, you could load bass IRs into it and run a bass preamp into it, for example.
Yeah,
if you really wanted to. So there's a lot of options there.
Yeah,
as well.
There's a lot of flexibility with it, which is very good.
One thing I haven't done. You mentioned BP1 is run BP1 into IR2. But turn off the preamp stage and then just run the cabinet stage. So you've got a really simple preamp, basically gain and volume, and then a cab. So you're basically creating the ultimate simple amplifier.
Yeah.
level tone and then a speaker. Maybe we'll have to give that a go.
Yeah. Well, the BP1 I love a lot. I was messing around with the Exotic Super Sweet as well.
Oh yeah,
recently. Yeah. A pedal that you had for a while.
I did have it for a bit.
I really like that pedal. What I love about that one is that if you haven't seen it, dear listener, the Exotic Super Sweet is like a mini pedal, but it's really deep, and it just has a gain control on the front, and then on the side you've got a number of dip switches which allow you to decide what it's a boost, I should mention. On the side it allows you to decide what you're boosting via a bunch of dip switches, so it can be a complete boost, a bass boost, a mid boost. There are a few other options as well. There are, I don't know, like 5 or 6 different options maybe on the side. And that's great because it allows you to kind of use it as a bit of a real tone shaper depending on what sort of amplifier you're running it into. Like I found using it as a mid boost was great for bass, actually, just for getting a really sort of clangy 70s precision bass tone. But anyway, I sort of digress. I was using that a lot, and the BP1's the first thing that's come along and that's replaced that, I think, as just being a here's some clarity and basic rudimentary tone shaping and a really nice collapsible gain structure in a really simple pedal.
I think, I've messed around with a bunch of boosters, and the BP1 for me was also just the one that felt when you turned it on, it did just make, you know, going way back, if there's new listeners, you know, from 10 years ago when we were like, there's a class of pedal that is just make gooder. It just makes everything more good.
And what did we used to love? Was it the TC Class A?
No, Spark Boost was always one, but the Pigtronics Class A Boost.
Ah, that was it, the Pigtronics Class A.
But I think, you know, that the thing with BP1 is there isn't any pedals on the market that cover the RE201 preamp and the CE1 preamp. And so many people have used those in recordings, in the studio, or, you know, live. And that is part of the chain. That's part of the signal chain. Yeah. I just thought it made delays and reverb sound so much better. So much better. I actually ran it at the end of all my drives and before all delays and reverbs, and just left it on all the time. And it just made such a huge difference. For me, if you were going to buy one pedal, if you were thinking, I'm going to buy something in January, BP1. It's just wicked. One of the best pedals I've been a part of, but also one of the best Boss pedals, in my opinion. I think it's really, really good. I know I've just said that about two Boss pedals, but they have been two really good Boss pedals.
Yeah, they have. I had to bring up the Gear of the Year 2023 list because I was like, what one pedal? I couldn't remember. It was there. Goodness me, what a way to start a series with a little bit of a little bit of Boss love. Yeah, the DM101 won best pedal, but also the Meris Mercury X came in second, and the Hologram Chroma console came in third, which is kind of interesting because when I look back on 2023, and someone said it on the Facebook group recently, 2023 was kind of the year of the lo-fi pedal. It feels like a lot of people were bringing out lo-fi pedals, which they varied from being tape-like choruses to really degraded delays thing. Obviously, Chase Bliss right at the front of that at the moment. It seems to be a really big thing. If the year before that was the year of the rat, like we saw every single company making a version of a rat pedal, I feel like 2023 was the year of lo-fi tones, Mac DeMarco tones.
Yeah, the year of everything sounding... Oh, my guitar's falling over. Year of everything sounding slightly rubbish. No, it's actually, you know, I thought we didn't really talk about it. Didn't come in the top three, but, you know, the Chase Bliss Lossy, they had some great stuff. You know, I thought it was great to see something of that digital age. But then the Chroma console, you know, the Chroma console, which is really designed after, you know, those sort of vintage recording consoles, and you've got all those effects in there as well. I've not seen as many people shout about this as the Hologram Electronics Microcosm.
Right.
But I
can't see this one ending up being Reverb's top selling effects pedal for 2 years running.
Yeah, I just don't know. I don't know. You know, there was, again, so much guitar, so many guitar pedals launched last year. You know, it's and that's from big companies to small companies. I think I was reading on our friend Stefan from Guitar Pedal X. He basically puts a thing up for every single pedal launch from every company, from tiny person in a shed to, you know, boss. And I think he did something like 300 articles last year. You know, so, you know, you just think how many pedals are launched. It is crazy. It really is.
Yeah.
There's more than enough. But there's certainly a few things that, yeah, I'm interested in. I've seen a few things I've seen already towards the tail end of last year. But I think those three pedals will hold the test of time. The Meris ones are the ones that are interesting. I know Blake fought hard for the Meris ones. I think maybe the ones that I've seen the least of, I think.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by iZotope and Native Instruments, two companies who provide the bulk of the recording and editing tools used by Guitar Nerds. If you have a home studio, or if you're thinking about getting into demo recording from home, then iZotope and Native Instruments provide the tools that you need to make premium quality recordings with ease and with virtually no equipment other than your guitar and laptop. iZotope make all the voice editing and audio repair tools that I use for the podcast each week, and Native Instruments Guitar Rig 7 is one of the best, most comprehensive collections of virtual effects and guitar amplifiers available anywhere. Use discount code NERDS10 on any product in the iZotope and Native Instruments catalog for 10% off their fantastic range of tools.
I think it's that though, Matt. I kind of feel like, so my honest cop on it, when I see things like the Mercury X come up, I find it hard to get excited about all-you-can-eat reverb or delay pedals, because it feels like that's been what has been on the menu for a long, long time, since the Big Sky's been about. And I'm sort of at a point where I'm like, I mean, this is just a personal thing. I'm quite happy with a Spring Reverb. I definitely went through a thing where I was like, oh, yeah, shimmer delays, octaving, quadranautical delays, reverbs, that's what I want. But then when it comes back to it, none of them are actually usable for music making. They're fine for making you know, like a weird Twin Peaks dream sequence, but as soon as you need to apply it to anything actual, well, what you probably need is a Spring Reverb. So when a company launches a £500 reverb or delay effects pedal, it's not the thing I want. And that's, I'm sure if I sat with this pedal, I would love it very much. I just always have the benchmark with reverbs and delays of, and this comes back to another product that launched, will it be as good as the reverb and delay models that are on the Helix? Because they're incredible. And the HX1 gives you that option at a decent enough price. And the other question, of course, is will it be as good as a Space Echo? And I don't even mean the new one. It could be the RE20. You know, that was an incredible pedal. And I've never found necessarily that I needed anything too much more than that. Maybe the Empress Tape Echo, that was very good.
I think pedals becoming, I guess I've always had appeal to studio engineers and producers and stuff like that. But I feel now as well, like Chase Bliss is specifically marketing the pedal, you know, and they're doing a lot of videos where it's not even on a pedal board. It is people like doing vocals with it or recording a track with it. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? You've got to take those things outside the box and potentially use them in a different way. And there's just so much variety to do that now. And you still get that. I think why they tend to be more popular than plugins to do the same thing is because they're so much more hands-on. And again, yeah, that's
absolutely,
if you're like rerouting audio or whatever, you want that kind of hands-on feeling, don't you, to do that. So I think, yeah, that again, interesting, a lot of interesting products in that sort of range of things last year. But ultimately, everyone can use an IR2, but not everyone can use a lossy, I guess, is the main thing.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And and then I guess over in guitars, we saw the one that fell a little flat, I guess, is the Silver Sky that we awarded third place, because it was the Dead Spec Silver Sky, which of course was a bunch of money and incredibly limited edition. I thought it was the best version of that guitar, and so I don't mind it being in third place. Certainly, it's not something that everyone's out racing. Well, no one has the option to go out and get one. But in second and third place were the PRS DGT, the SE DGT, and the Harmony Jupiter Thin Line in first place. I've seen people posting about picking up Jupiter Thin Lines on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group. It is a great guitar. Like, the thing about Harmony that we always come back to, you've got a Juno sat next to you right there, is there is no other US company building guitars of that quality with that sort of feature spec at that sort of price. Whilst, as we noted on the podcast, whilst companies like Fender and PRS and Gibson, their prices go up and up and up to the point where, you know, we're looking at £1,500 Epiphones and Mexican Fenders that start at like £750.
Yeah.
For a couple of hundred quid more, Harmony will do you a US made guitar with a mono case, with a nitro finish, with gorgeous pickups. And, you know, they're just offering such incredible quality.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I keep looking at the Silver Sky and I'm like, maybe I should.
Yeah.
You know, own one of those, and I think it's great, and I do love the Dead Spec. And then I'm sort of going, was it the best thing? You know, was it really? But again, I think we always struggle as guitar nerds, despite being guitar nerds, more with guitars, because me and you specifically have very specific tastes. But I would agree with you in the sense that with Harmony, you know, if you're ticking all the boxes, for me, they just work. Yeah, because, you know, for all the reasons you listed, made in America, great price, great spec, interesting, cool sound. I mean, my one is just so loud acoustically. I've just been playing it acoustically mainly.
Right.
And it's just so good. It just rings out, sustained for days. It's just brilliant. And I would say that in the grand scheme of things, they are affordable. Obviously, £1,500 to some or £1,000 to some is obviously not affordable, but, you know, compared to what else is out there.
For the money,
I think they're great. For the money,
what you're getting is better than almost any other company at that price point. You know, they're really pushing the boundaries of what you can get.
Yeah.
And of course, PRS there, you know, with two guitars in the top three this year. What is happening? Who'd have thought I'd have let it happen? But
certainly not a few years ago. But yeah, it's interesting because I don't know whether those Dead Spec guitars have actually sold out. But I just Googled it, a few places on pre-order, and then Guitar have come up with, they're actually doing a sale price on the Silver Sky in Roxy Pink.
Oh.
Should be $2,599, is $1,799.
Wow.
Joe, shall I sell some stuff and make that happen? That is
an aggressive... There are actually... We're going to talk... Maybe we'll talk about some deals that are going on. Oh, dear listener, I'm so sorry for anyone who's not UK-based, because, of course, whenever I talk about deals, I tend to talk about the deals that are fed to me on social media, which means they'll be in the UK.
Mm.
But that is very good. January has been very good. I've seen, you know, normally, I think... The deals are pretty piecemeal in the guitar world, because I kind of feel like the price is really the price on new stuff a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So you don't often see really, really great deals. This year, I've been flabbergasted by them. The thing I have been... I actually have it in my cart at GAC at the moment and have had for a little while. The Squire Limited Edition Classic Vibe 60s Telecaster Thin Line, gold anodized plate, sonic blue, £259. This is Classic Vibe spec, so you're getting a lacquered maple neck and board. Obviously, the slimmer 60s profile, which is annoying. Gorgeous anodized, that angled plate that you get on a thin line. It's a Telecaster. You can, you know, get some great custom pickups and put them in there, and then this is the best guitar in the world. It looks amazing. £259 down for £430. That is an incredible deal.
Yeah, that is. I think I was the one that emailed you about it.
You did.
I was like, that seems like insanely cheap. I think it's like £100 off or something like that.
More than that. It's nearly £200 off.
Yeah.
It's very good. They also do it in desert sand, which is way more my vibe, but it's slightly more money in desert sand. But I'm almost there. I'm almost there. I keep thinking about it. But I don't know. This year for me, Matt, is all about slimming down. I'm getting rid of almost all my jazz basses, most of my weird basses, a bunch of my guitars. I'm feeling very Fendery at the moment. You know, I've got my American. Oh, this is still plugged in. I've got my American vintage 52 reissue Telecaster that sits right next to me at my desk. It's got a set of green pickups. The custom brand green pickups made me a set of 51 style. They're even relict, even lightly relict pickups in there, and it just made it the best guitar in the world. I've got it set up with the original 51 switching, so you get bridge pickup, neck pickup with the tone rolled off, neck pickup with the tone rolled on. So you don't ever have the option to play the two pickups together, because why would you? That's pointless. So I've got that sat next to me, and I feel like that's all I'm playing guitar wise. And then right next to me on the other side, I just have my 50s P bass in. That I've got refinished in a two-tone sunburst. It's just the 50s classic.
And that is a good bass.
I'm doing everything right. Well, I actually also have my Silverburst. This is a vintage. I have a Silverburst P bass, and it's basically the same thing, but made by Vintage, not Fender. Those are the three things I have sat next to me, and I'm doing everything on them, and I'm feeling like all I really want is a couple of P basses and a Telecaster. You know, that's all I need. So I don't know. This year, big sell-offs and just things with gloss maple necks is what I want.
I really want this Silver Sky. I'm just looking at it now. I'm like £800 off. Looks like they've got one left in stock. I'm like, how can I get $17,799?
Have you heard of this thing called a credit card?
If I hadn't bought a house and already got plenty of credit, then maybe. Maybe. Why don't you put it on your credit card, Joe, and I'll pay you back.
I have a few credit cards. This could work.
But I'll send you a bunch of my gear.
You wanted DGT anyway. That was what you were after.
Joe, that was last year.
Oh, I see. Are you going off the DGT? Is it because the PRS SE DGT? It seemed like it got a lot of chatter on the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook. People seemed excited about it. A lot of people agreed with whoever it was. Was it Philip or Blake who was talking about the weird location of the pickup selector?
No, I still think it's a great guitar. I've watched a lot of reviews after we did Gear of the Year as well, and a lot of different people talking about it. And I actually think for the money, I think it's bang on. But then again, I also really highly rated the Silver Sky. So this is the next option, and it's in pink. So, you know, this could be it, Joe.
You think you found your thing?
Yeah, maybe I'll just have to sell a bunch of stuff.
You've got enough strats, Matt.
No, I've got, three, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, well, Matt, maybe you can help me. I was thinking of completing my Fender collection with a Strat, a nice 50s style Strat. I want gloss maple, neck. I was thinking classic vibe, like black, white plate. You get the thickened neck. It's annoyingly 9.5, but I can live with that as a radius. What do you think? What are good options for a Stratocaster? I don't want to spend loads. I don't mind spending more than a classic vibe, but I specifically want something traditional in the, on the neck front. It has to be gloss. It can't be any of this satin mumbo jumbo that you like.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the world's first true guitar string custom shop. The thing that I love most about Stringjoy is just their attention to detail, their dedication to making their strings the best in the world. And that's a labour-intensive task that they don't shy away from. Stringjoy are also innovative. They're always looking for new ways to make strings better. As guitar players, we've become so used to all the shortfalls of commercially available strings that we stopped even looking for them to be better, last longer, intonate well, easily. Stringjoy bring all of that to every pack of strings they make, and they're available almost as readily as any other generically made guitar string. Stringjoy strings are available at stringjoy.com and at 400 plus dealers across the globe. If your local store doesn't stock Stringjoy yet, ask them to.
Has to be gloss. It has to be gloss maple, and it has to be how 50 spec does it need?
Because this isn't like a Telecaster, I'm less fussy. Obviously, if I could get 7.25, I would. But I also, if there was a 9.5 radius Strat that did everything for, you know, 700 quid, and a 7.5 inch radius, 7.25 meant I had to spend 1800, I'd go with the 9.5. Do you know what I mean? I'd love a more traditional spec. I appreciate that Fender like to isolate proper vintage spec to the upper echelons of their pricing.
Because you could buy on Reverb right now in Brighton, Joe.
Yeah.
There is a Fiesta Red Classic 50 Strat from 2013.
Wow.
Which has the glossed maple fingerboard.
Lovely.
Someone has also done the best modification in the world to it and put the David Gilmour EMG DG20 pickups in it. So you've got the best of both worlds. It's got the 50 spec with the Gilmour in it, you know. So that is a banger of a guitar.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
It's interesting because I don't know a huge amount. I can't remember a huge amount of what's out there now, but there's a lot of these like kind of 50 Strats from like 10 years ago, like the Mexican ones with the like pretty gloss neck on there for like somewhere between 500 and 700. Feels like a good shout to me. I think that's a similar kind of era to like the Baja stuff, which was always really, really solid. So I think that could be quite a good shout, because they definitely had the pretty heavily glossed maple neck. I mean, looking at one here. But then again, Vintera.
Vintera's good. Modding spec. I could give J-Cross a shout.
Yeah. Yeah. So Vintera. A deal. 50s Vintera. Strat, so they do it in a variety of colors. That could be a good chat if you want a modern one. So they do a Vintera 2 now, isn't it? I think that was like September last year. What are they? So it's €1,100, £720. There's actually a 15% off winter sale right now, Joe Branton.
On Fender.com?
On Fender.com on the 50s Vintera spec.
That is pretty good.
Excuse me. And you've got the soft V 7.25 radius fingerboard with the glossed maple.
That is everything I want. I think you might have found my thing. And it's a new, I never look new. This is the thing. I'm always trying to hawk out some sort of super deal on Reverb or eBay.
It's actually on Fender.com are offering 30% off. Kick off in 2024 in style, up to 30% off guitars and basses.
Wow.
So, that's on there. That color only.
Right. What's the color?
Which is fine. It is surf green. Seafoam green.
That's even worse. It's the worst color, man. I will only accept actual colors. Fiesta red, black, white, sunburst. That's it.
Oh dear. Well,
I'll find something. I'll keep digging, but I'm insistent on never buying stupid surf colors from Fender until they learn to stop making all their guitars in those awful colors.
But they've got all the specs you want, Joe.
Yes, so, I know.
Just deal with it. They've also got a decent chunk off the gold foil jazz bass. 15% off, Joe.
Yeah.
Also in the wonderful sonic blue.
Yeah, yeah. That did look cool. I wasn't sure about the gold foil pickup on a jazz bass, to be honest. But yeah, that it does look very good. It does look very good. Anyway, I'm gonna look for a Strat over the next little while. Matt Knight, I want to talk to you about the things that you want to buy this year for your studio, but I feel like considering where we are in the podcast, I'd like to talk about a couple of news articles first.
Yeah, let's do that.
We'll circle back to that. So in the news this week, well, over the last few weeks, dear listener, we've had the Kemper Profiler Player, their new sort of mini profiling amp. Thank God, finally. We've got Magnetone have released their M80, a compact amplifier. Magnetone really using the whole Slash thing as a way to kind of launch some new amps and go, here's some cool stuff, which is great. We've had Laney introduce the world's most powerful FRFR. Gibson have got the Mod Collection. Earthquaker released the Blooms, a bass version of the Plumes, even though bassists were using the Plumes already and loving it. And we have the MXR Joshua, which is a very, very exciting ambient echo. Matt, you also added a couple of things you wanted to talk about, the Kernum Fuzz and the Soma Cosmos as well.
The Cosmos isn't new, but very much in my I want to buy one this year type thing.
Part of your 2024 wish list.
Yes.
Okay, so where do we start? Should we start at the top? Should we start with Kemper? Because I feel like this is a pretty cool thing to have happened. Or is it? Are they too late to the party, Matt? It's, Kemper, I feel like, is still dominating this top-end part of amp modeling, in that even though with things like the Tone Master Pro by Fender and even Helix introducing, I guess, more user-friendly interfaces, Kemper are definitely way back there. Their interfaces are pretty rudimentary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Pretty 80s the way you navigate around a Kemper, but sound quality is still fantastic, and they still are sort of dominating as this is the profiler that studios get. You know, this is the amp modeler that studios buy.
Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, Kemper were really there kind of, I wouldn't say first, but they're kind of they were certainly the one that caught most people's attention, and they were everywhere.
Yeah.
And they still are everywhere. And they haven't really had to do much. And obviously they bought the Kemper profile ahead. They had the power rack. And then obviously they bought out the bigger floorboard. The bigger floorboard, I don't really feel kind of made a massive impact, because I think there were other things starting to come out. And obviously the Helix was very dominant. And obviously we've seen Quad Cortex really dominate that space. And then obviously we saw things like IR2. You know, and we've had things like Iridium and an amp on the floor, and I guess they're kind of going, well, the big one didn't necessarily work. People love the head, but actually some people just want that, but on a pedal board. And that's really where the Kemper Profiler player is, because it's all of those amp tones, but it's in a guitar pedal. I think this is a very, very cool bit of kit. However, you know, well, I was going to say lack of controls, but then we've just sort of talked about IR2 being very, very tactile. But this feels a little bit more stripped back, and it's a lot more money. You know, we're talking 700 euros here. So you've got an iOS editor. It is fully compatible with all of the Kemper Profiler amp rigs, but I think the idea is that you very much have the sounds and then you recall the sounds.
Yeah, it's so, got 3 foot switches on board, which is handy. You can, but you know, you've got your three main rigs and you can search through scenes and you can bank up and down. However, you bank up through buttons, not through foot switches, so less for on the fly. Really, this is like you're going to have your three tones there, but also this is designed for in a similar way to, not too far away from what the IR2 is, which is for people with a pedal board and they just want an amplifier, but they want it to be on their pedal board. I worry about anything that has, like, you know, this is an iOS editor. I don't mean to keep comparing it to the IR2. In fact, I don't even have to. I can compare it to the HX Stomp. Just compare it to that. I can do everything on the HX Stomp. There are things you can't do on the Profiler player without the editor. And that's a problem. That is a problem.
That is a problem, because it do you know what? It's the same thing as we talked about it briefly last year. And once the studio becomes more set up and I can talk about it in a bit more detail. HX1 versus the H9. Like, I love the H9, but you are basically limited to properly editing it with a phone. And I think that's the reason I've never deep dived into it as much, because I can't find a preset and twiddle some controls, and it's all very cryptic. And I think that's always a challenge. I think that's always a challenge, to be like, oh, you've got to use this to get this out of it, you know?
It's really cool for people who are very familiar with Kemper and want something that's a bit more on the fly. I think it's definitely great. And I love Kemper. I think they make great sounding gear. I really like the look of the proper big profile ahead. I like that they haven't gone super modern tech. They've tried to keep something old school. You know, it's got that whole sort of vintage radio vibe to it. So I don't want to be negative about this product. I guess I just wish there was maybe a little bit more control on board. I mean, when other brands have managed to release their compact versions of this sort of product and give you more control than this, this still feels relatively large with relatively limited control.
Yeah, I think this one's a tricky one for me. I think it's a great product. I think it's great that they've bought Kemper smaller. Would I use it? Probably not. I even think the IO is a little bit limited, because, you know, if you think about things like IR2's got an effects loop on it, so you can run other pedals with it, whereas this is, you kind of think, well, everything's got to be profiled.
Yep.
Also, it seems to run off an absolutely bonkers power supply.
Oh, really?
yeah, it says here 9 to 12 volts 24 watts center pin negative. So I don't think you can run it off like a normal PSA.
Right.
Okay. Which I always think, again, is like, you know, annoying. Because it's something different that you have to have with you. Certainly if you're going to run it on a pedal board.
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably not one for me. It feels like, again, there's no screen, but then you kind of gonna have the screen most of the time because you're gonna be editing or tweaking.
Yeah.
I think if you're just looking for a amp pedal board, I think there's other options. I think if you've already got the Profiler, this might be a good option for you. But then it's only got one XLR out, which again is very bizarre. You would have thought it would have had two XLR outs or two combi jacks.
Yeah.
You know, so you could have run line out or, you know, quarter inch or XLR out. And in a world where everything now is moving to USB-C, I think the inclusion of USB-A, and don't, you know, Boss have got a lot here.
Come
you
on.
Know, Boss, I just Come like, just on. Put USB-C on it. Because then it could be class compliant, and you could use it as an interface to record direct into.
We all still have all the old USB connections anyway. I understand it's strange to, you know, not make something USB-C, but I tell you why I'm actually hot on this at the moment. I did. Where is it? No idea where it's gone. It's here. I did a little video on Instagram, dear listener, on the new Snark Titanium, their rechargeable clip-on tuner. Just to say, hey, this is cool. It's, you know, it's a clip-on tuner that you can recharge. Because I used to love those TC, what do they call their clip-ons?
Polytune.
Yeah. I used to love the Polytune clip or Polytune mini. No, clip. Yeah, it was clip. Yeah. I used to love those, but I was forever changing the batteries. So I love. I know Matt the Boss have done a rechargeable clip-on tuner for ages. I didn't actually know that, but this was really handy. I did a little video being like, oh, yeah, this is great. And people were commenting on it, not on my one, but when it got reshared by Dan Electro, who owned Snark, people being like, this doesn't have USB-C, so it's useless. Like, and there were a few negative comments about the fact that it wasn't USB-C. We've all still got the cables. It comes with the cable.
Nah, I bend them all, mate.
No, it comes with the cable, you know. It doesn't matter. This USB-C obsession is ridiculous. We've all got all the cables.
We're going to have to agree to disagree there, Joe. No, I think fair. USB-C is the future. I think it's because USB can handle data and charging much better and much more efficiently.
Oh, so the thing that we're moving away from is more efficient than the thing we're moving towards. Oh, that sounds very Apple.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
But is it USB-B? Because that is the worst one.
Yes,
the worst one.
It's the tiny one. Has that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's useless. Way more specific.
Yeah.
but this one is actually like, in fact, I don't think it's A, it's like the proper old school chunky, like your
oh, like printer one.
Printer.
Wow. Yeah, wow.
That's
old school. I like it though. It's a bit more robust. It's a bit more giggable.
They call it USB
Ultra
B. USB B.
Right. BB.
Which is a bit more annoying because I even have to keep one of those aside because, you know, hands up, you know, Boss have got some products that also have. but I think that everything modern now, I think USB-C makes more sense because certainly for this product, the reason I mentioned for this product, Joe, is because at that point you could probably make it a class compliant like audio driver. So you could then use it to record directly, which I don't think this is possible to use it as an MIDI That's capabilities for door, USB audio capabilities play along indoor. But again, I think there's something to be said about being able to do notes into your phone or iPad. Certainly, where you've got iPad Pro now that allows you to run Logic. I don't know. Maybe that's very specific, but that's just me.
No, not at all. I think you're actually very right. You know,
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'd love to see this in situ. I'd like to be able to see people actually using this. I mean, they're saying data backup via USB C stick that you or a USB stick that you would keep in your pocket. I'm like, no one's going to do that. No one's going to do that.
No, we don't need. Look, you don't need a hard drive version. It needs to be in the cloud these days. Anyway,
in the cloud, baby.
Speaking of technology, let's. Who'd have thought when we started this podcast in 2013 that we'd be spending 10 minutes talking about USB-Cs on a guitar podcast? But that's where we are.
This is where we are.
That's the guitar world now.
This is where we are.
And speaking of the guitar world now, Lainey, Lainey have introduced the world's most powerful FRFR guitar cabinet, a 412 monster packing 2600 watts that they've designed with Devin Townsend, of course. Who'd have thought a 412 would be being released in 2024? Actually, Ashdown are about to release a bunch of 412, so yeah.
But, well, this is a very interesting turn of events.
Right.
Because, you know, the world is moving. I think there's still a lot of valve amps out there. People love amps, you know. We even talked about, on Gear of the Year, the crazy expensive 2-Rock and all of this stuff, right? But loads of guitarists have never plugged into an amp. Loads of guitarists are using plugins. Loads of people are buying Helix still, you know, Quad Cortex, Tone Master Pro. But you go to a gig and you're like, I'm going to run it straight into the PA, into my in-ears. And loads of people are doing that. And the guitar player is happy. But there are also loads of people that go, I just want something on stage. I was talking to someone today and they were like, the only reason they run cabs on stage is so the people in the front row don't get blasted just by the drummer.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something to be said for how a band sets up. You can't have everything running through the PA.
So I think this is the thing. I think a lot of people are going, I was talking to a friend of mine, Andy, who plays in Palm Reader, and he uses Quad Cortex, and he runs into an Orange Pedal Baby into an amp because he's just like, I just want to flap some trousers on stage, you know. This is a great solution for people that are going into that digital world, but it's brilliant because the digital world has gone, let's make things more powerful and smaller and more powerful and smaller and more compact and more compact. And then it's like, but now I want to hear myself on stage. So now they've gone for the biggest possible thing.
Well, yeah, this is definitely the extreme, but this is what I want. Yeah, I thought Fender did a good job with the FRFRs that they brought out that look like Fender amps. Before this, we only had the Headrush one and a random one by someone like Lainey, and they were like wedges. And that's not what we want.
You want something that looks like amps.
We want the things that look like amps because they look great and we can put them behind us and we can hear them, and then the stage looks cool and we can still hear the stuff. The thing is, I think it's more than just wanting to people in the front row to hear you or wanting to flap some trousers. More than that, it's the fact that I can't afford a Dumble amp, but you know what? Tonex do some. The IK Multimedia Tonex is £450 and it does some cracking Dumble models. I'm not saying that it's the same as a Dumble, dear listener. I'm just saying I'm perfectly happy with that. It is brilliant. I can't get that from a valve amp. I can't get that specific tone from it without spending a bucket load of money. It's reliable. It's tourable. And it's, super compact. Sounds great. Now I want to bring that to a stage. Well, an FRFR cab is exactly what I want. I don't want to run things through PA. That's why I've stayed away from that sort of thing. I want more products like this. I don't need 2600 watts necessarily, but Devin Townsend.
One of the interesting things here is they've it's as loud as a jet engine because the jet engine is 140 decibels at takeoff. I'm like, yeah, they're not the first ones to do that. Marshall Mode 4.
Yeah.
Well, no, not Marshall Mode 4. The Line 6 HD147, which had a maximum dB output of 147 decibels, which is basically would make you deaf if you turned it up to full volume. But I think the interesting thing here is that they've built this IR system into the back of it. So you've got the ability to use an IR for the cabinet, but send a different one to front of house.
Right.
And then you've got these emulated XLR DI outputs.
Uh-huh.
So you can, it kind of remind me of the Line 6 Dream Rig, when you ran into the Pod HD 500.
That was ahead of its time.
the Variax into the pod, into the DT25, and it would change the valves in the DT25, and it would, you know, and it was, so every patch had the optimal amp sound, and this is kind of the same thing. It's like every patch could have an optimal IR roar, whatever, and I think it just gives more options for live use. Don't think it would necessarily be more options for recording, because you'd then be silent, you'd probably be hearing it through monitors. But I think for people out there, the Quad Cortex users, the Helix users, you know, it just allows you to have that power on stage and have something that is FRFR but can sound like different speakers, but it's consistent. That you know, again, consistency's the key. So yeah, I think it's interesting, certainly, to come back round to that. It weighs 40, just shy of 43 kilos. So in pounds, that's 95 pounds. I mean, that is...
wow.
That is heavy. Mm. That's heavier. Obviously, it's a 412, but, you know, I wonder, Marshall 4x12... How much does a 1960 Marshall 1960A weigh, Joe?
No idea.
Is it lighter or heavier than a 1960?
It can't be more than 60 pounds.
36 kilos. Oh. So for context, it weighs almost another half of what the a Marshall 4x12 weighs like.
Wow.
So it's, I think it's very specific, but I am sure that probably something like this is going to allow them to make a product like this now and then scale that down to a 212 and then probably a 112.
Yeah.
You know, this technology trickles down. So, at, you know, $1,100 or $1,800. It's not cheap.
No.
But
it's very niche. But I'm hoping that it's paving the way for more of this sort of thing, for more FRFR, more ways to bring digital amplification to people like me who still want an amp on stage. That would
and
be
I'll
great.
Tell you what I like, Joe, the fact that it has a downward facing LED light strip at the top of the cab,
right
beneath the grill, that basically illuminates the front of the cab. Very cool for the on stage look.
That is very cool. That is super cool.
Yeah. Would love to try one. Never.
Well, we could go to Birmingham. We'd go to Laney.
I do not want to ever turn one up to full. My hearing is far too precious.
Fair enough.
Yeah, 139 decibels. I think that's probably just a result of the power they've put in it rather than them actually trying to get an amp that's way too loud.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we are coming towards the end of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, dear listener and Matt. Before we do round anything up, though, I did want to have a little listen to this week's sound sample, the sound sample of the week. Like I said, I've been spending a lot of time this week with if you're watching, dear, if you're listening, dear listener, it's the Boss BP1W. The booster preamp, and I've been using it more as kind of I've been using it with a very, very clean IR as almost the amp entire, putting a little bit of reverb afterwards and actually getting the entire sound out of it, coupling that with the American Vintage Telecaster loaded up with Green Pickups 51 style bridge pickup mainly. And I was actually using it with something, and the thing that I did want to mention was the new Ashdown Roasted basses, which I got to be kind of a part of the design. These are the Saint Soap basses. I'm holding it up, dear listener, if you're listening. It's a dead simple offset style bass that has a soap bar pickup bang in the middle, and then it has like a roasted maple neck and board. And they're sub £300. And I think they sound great. It's got that sort of Rickenbackery meets precision bass sound from having the soap bar. And I just love that it's such a simple, aggressive, old school sounding bass. So I've used that with just the Ashdown Pro DI, which is the new kind of like Sans Amp style pedal, basically from Ashdown. Just that with a little bit of grit. And then just the Telecaster with the BP1. So it's stripped back, natural sounding gear. But I thought it sounded great. Here's a little sound sample I've made using that stuff.
There you go. Dead simple. Just sounds great. I think that's going to be my thing for the year. Less plugins, more natural sounding stuff.
BP1 is definitely the way to go for that, Joe, I would say.
I agree. I think it's a fantastic sounding product. Now, we are right at the end of the podcast. So, dear listener, we're going to be heading over to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where you can join Matt and I for a whole extra episode each week. This week, we're probably going to be continuing some of the news items we haven't spoken about. Things like the Gibson Mod Collection, the Earthquaker Blooms, the MXR Joshua. And we're going to take a little look at the question of the week, which is John Bai's gear prediction post on Facebook. We'll be having a little look at those. This is of the first episode in season 5. I haven't told any jokes because I felt towards the end I was scraping the barrel. Dear listener, if you're joining Guitar Nerds for the first time in season 4, I told a dad joke every week, but they were getting bad. But Matt, I do have one for you.
Hit me, Joe.
So this fella goes to a funeral, and he goes to the steps up to the widow and he says, "Do you mind if I say a word?" And she says, "No, please do." And he says, after clearing his throat, "Bargain." Her eyes well up with tears. And she says, "Thanks. That means a great deal."
Joe. Joe, this is why we stopped. No, it's brilliant.
Well, I thought it was pretty good. I thought that was pretty good.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. I can't lie.
Well, to not finish this podcast on such a downer, I'm going to thank all of our top tier Patreon supporters before we go. So thank you very much to Nicholas Strom, Rocket Rob Patterson, Phil Sadler, Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dorsonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Chris Franklin, Anton Fryant, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, John Conaway, Russell Healing, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Dan Pilver, Brian Einsler, Dylan Griffiths, Mark Hizal Kadowacki, Eric File, Peter Pesce, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Wyland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losith, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, Moog Gravit. There you go.
I gave a lot of, for anyone watching this, if you've made it this far, there was a lot of reactions there from me in a Apple Sonoma update kind of way.
Of course, yes. Yeah, whenever we make hand gestures now, unfortunately, in video format, things happen.
Indeed.
There you go. Exactly like that. So thank you very much for joining us, dear listener, on this, the first episode in the Guitar Nerds podcast. We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Goodbye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.